My wife told me a couple days later, a day later, that she felt when the baby left. And that's when it hurt. That's when I realized that I had been paying for hired murder. I don't know another way of putting it.
Welcome back to Straight Talk on Life Issues. I'm Victor Nieves, as always, joined by Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute. And today we have a very powerful program for you on redemption.
Yes, and Victor, as you know, I've counseled several fathers as they struggled with the emotional aftermath of abortion. And I can tell you that what our listeners are going to hear are very dramatic stories of ways that they have clawed their way back to redemption, and it's going to be a powerful and memorable program.
And you know, Brad, sometimes people who are pro-abortion will accuse us in the movement of only caring about the baby. Obviously, you and I know that's not true. We're deeply concerned with everyone who's impacted in abortion, including those who have made bad choices in the past, but they found that redemption through the blood of the cross. And as a movement, of course, we continue, we support and we nurture those. And many times they become some of our most impactful advocates for life. And we're going to be speaking to two such examples today, transformed lives. The first of our guests is Dr. Kathy Altman. She's a retired board-certified OBGYN. She's currently an associate scholar with the Charlotte Lozier Institute. She's a member of the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, as well as the Florida Medical Association, and is a Life Fellow of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. She practiced medicine from 1981 to 2014. We also have joining us Josh Sorth. He's married to his wonderful wife, Jessica, and he has been for almost 20 years. Together, they have three boys. He's originally from Texas. And while Josh was in high school, he became a Satanist and actually had his first abortion during his junior year of high school. In total, Josh was involved in seven abortions, but since then has given his life to Christ and is now a very powerful advocate for life. I want to thank both of you so much for coming on the show.
Josh and Kathy, I want to welcome you both to this very special episode of Straight Talk on Life Issues.
Thank you.
Well, I'd like to start with you, Kathy. I'll never forget ever the first time I heard you speak. And it was at a pro-life banquet I've been to, I don't know how many of them. And your soft-spoken words as you started, I thought, this is probably going to be a yawner. Maybe I can slip out partway through. And I'm sorry, that's what I honestly thought. But as you began to speak in that soft manner that you have, I was totally hooked on your message. And I literally was sitting at the end of my seat, holding on to each thing that you taught us to that presentation. So, you know, God has blessed you in so many ways. Out of the ashes of both of your lives, He is doing absolutely wonderful things. So I want you both to know that God will bless your efforts here. Kathy, briefly tell me your story.
Well, I grew up as a preacher's kid, but by the time I got to college, I was an atheist. I met my future husband on spring break, subsequently got pregnant right before medical school, had an abortion because I was afraid I wouldn't be able to be a doctor, among other things. And so when I got to my residency program, which was OBGYN, I truly believed that abortion was a woman's right. So I not only did not opt out of having to learn how to do abortions, I embraced them. And I felt that I was really helping women. So I learned how to do first trimester D&C with suction abortions. And then I went outside the program to learn how to do the D&E or dismemberment abortions. And it's funny, I tried really hard to make that painful procedure as painless as possible for my patients, but I never even thought about what the baby was going through. Instead of moonlighting at an ER to make extra money, I moonlighted at an abortion clinic. I never had any qualms except when I was going through my neonatal intensive care unit training, and I realized that we were trying to save babies the same size as some that we were aborting. But You know, we're taught to compartmentalize, and I shoved it to the back of my mind and just went on, didn't think about it anymore. I was so gung-ho, I even did abortions while I was pregnant. I didn't see human fetus as any different from the chick embryos that we dissected in college. After my baby was born, though, something happened. I somehow made that fetus-baby connection, and by the end of that day, I could no longer kill babies just because they weren't wanted. The problem was that I still believed abortion was a woman's right, and I still referred for abortion, even after becoming a Christian later. But in my practice, as I saw young women who had unwanted pregnancies and kept them and did well, I was also seeing young women having abortions and then having the emotional and physical complications of those. So that was a little chink in the armor. I also ended up teaching a little Bible study for kids. And some of the kids in there, their mothers could have easily aborted. They were single moms, unplanned pregnancies. And I was thinking, gosh, these little kids wouldn't be here, and they're so sweet. Finally, a Christian friend approached me and he said, Kathy, I know that you feel strongly about abortion, but would you read this article? And it was an article that compared abortion to the Holocaust. And my dad was present when the first concentration camp was liberated in Germany. Or I guess it wasn't Germany, maybe it was Poland. Anyway, the first concentration camp, when it was liberated, my dad was there. So I grew up with all those pictures and stories, and I never could understand how the German doctors could do what they did. But as I read that article, I realized how, just as I didn't see my victims as human, they didn't see their victims as human. And that was when I realized that I was a mass murderer. And it was right when Ted Bundy was in the news. He was a serial killer. And I thought, gosh, I've murdered a lot more people than Ted Bundy. And thankfully, I had Christian friends who helped me get the healing that I needed. And then I basically said, okay, God, whatever you want me to do, I'll do. And that launched my pro-life adventure.
Well, you've given us a lot of information in that story. Specifically, was there one single reason that you wanted to be part of the abortion industry?
I just wanted to help women. And I thought I was doing that. I thought I could best do that by helping them get rid of their babies that they didn't want.
As you were in the industry, would you say that you were desensitized with each abortion?
Oh, I'm sure.
Did you experience that desensitization in a way that was noticeable to you?
No, because I was already at the level where I believed that abortion was a good thing. I was so deluded that I didn't need desensitization. I already thought it was a good thing.
Well, Kathy, not only did you perform abortions as a doctor, you had an abortion personally, as you mentioned. And I'm curious to know what was going on in your head as you did abortions while you were pregnant.
I rationalized it. What I told myself was that their baby was unwanted, mine was wanted, and so there was I didn't see any conflict there. So what I rationalized was that my baby was wanted and theirs was not, and so I didn't see any problem with that. I know that sounds strange. My whole attitude is strange to me now. I don't know how I could believe the way I did. I think part of it is the compartmentalization that you're trained to do as a physician, because we end up having to hurt people. And so that just becomes second nature.
At what point in your career of doing abortions did it launch you on the journey of becoming pro-life?
There were two main things. One was having a baby. I think that changed my attitude. I somehow made a connection between fetus and baby. And I could tell by my responses to my patients that day. I had a patient who I had done at least 3 abortions on previously, and I hadn't been doing them that long, and in that clinic. And I went to the clinic director and said, I don't want to do this. She's just using it as her birth control. And they said, well, you don't have that right. You have to do it. It's her right to have it. So I did it. And of course, she didn't want any birth control afterwards. I don't think I would have even had that thought prior to having had a baby. And then another patient came in with a friend. And afterwards, the friend said, do you want to look at the tissue? And she said, no, I just want to kill it. And my thought was, well, what did the baby ever do to you? I would not have had that thought earlier. And then the last patient that really sealed the deal was a woman who had 4 children already, and she and her husband didn't feel that they could financially afford this baby, and she cried the whole time that did it. But I don't think I would have had those responses had I not had my baby.
And that sounds very logical. Can you point to anything specific about having the baby that made you change your mind? Was it the baby kicking? Was it seeing your baby on ultrasound? Or was it just the concept of this is life?
It definitely was not. I remember when I felt my baby at 16 weeks, I felt like she was a little butterfly in there with boxing gloves. But that didn't change anything. I don't know what changed. I just know that the first day I went back 6 weeks postpartum was when something changed. I don't know what. I don't know if it was the bonding with my baby. I don't know if God just at that point finally got through to me. But I just couldn't stomach killing babies anymore. Because as you know, the physician has to count all the body parts. I don't think anybody can do that for very long unless their conscience is really seared.
Yeah.
And that's why most OBGYNs don't do abortions.
The scales were removed from your eyes.
Yes. But sadly, I still believed in abortion, you know, so I referred for abortion. I just couldn't stomach doing it myself. And it really wasn't until I read that article that compared abortion to the Holocaust that I totally changed my mind and became pro-life.
Having spent a couple days at Birkenau and Auschwitz in Poland, I totally get your remarks because the comparisons are uncanny.
Oh, yeah.
Josh, thank you for being patient. Let's turn some attention in your direction. Briefly tell us your story.
Well, 45 years old, married, 3 wonderful children, was in the military, and I've had a rough growing up, we'll say. My parents did their best. They loved me the best they could, but things happened, led to me starting high school, started actually becoming a Satanist throughout all of my freshman year. I mean, I was raised Catholic, had my first abortion just before, well, I was a junior in high school, and always thought, not my body, not my problem. And I just was the financial backer of it. Went through the military with my first wife, ended up getting a divorce shortly after, and started getting promiscuous. And, well, that led to women calling me saying, hey, you need to take care of this. And my thoughts were always the same. Your body, your choice. I'll just pay for it. And I continued to self-medicate, numb myself. And I met my current wife, been together for going on 20 years now. We had a situation where we had to have an abortion. That one was just very different. That one hit close to home. This was a woman that I planned on being with for life. And it was, like I said, it was difficult. She took it very hard. We didn't talk for about a week after she told me. I was dealing with all sorts of emotions. I basically had her deal with it herself, and I was not there physically nor emotionally for her. And she came back. I talked to her about a week later, and she had said that she did it. She had the abortion, and it crushed me. And then I started getting mad because she didn't ask me or talk to me about it. But then I had to realize I closed myself off and didn't give her a chance. And then more regret, more self-medicating, more numbness. And that was a very long process. And then fast forward about 12 years, 13 years, I had finally come to the Lord, submitted to the Father, and he brought us to a church, brought us to Pastor Jack and Sheila, who have done Save One. Third Sunday, my wife and I were there. Sheila came up and talked about Save One. And we went home that day, and I told my wife, I said, I think we need to go into that class. 2 weeks later, we started the class, ripped off all the Band-Aids, everything covering all the hurt.
Ouch.
Big time. Wife and I got into it there several times, but we needed to get through it, and it was very difficult. But because of that, we have 2 more boys. I have a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old at the house right now that I just couldn't imagine life without.
Yeah, I often liken the process of healing to dealing with a pus-filled wound, and it's painful to drain that pus out, to open it up, and it heals. There'll be a scar that you will always be aware of, but you're able to move on. Is that similar to what you experience?
100%. I would not have my boys right now if we would not have gone through the healing, you know, and opened up everything to each other as well as to the Father. Like you said, it's like lancing a pus-filled boil. You have to do it. It's the only way it will heal.
So what was your attitude toward having more children before and after the healing?
Well, because of the situation that happened to me, I was sexually abused growing up. I never wanted any children. Through my first marriage, her and I had a child. She got pregnant. I gave her the option if we were keeping it or not. She said she wanted to keep it. So I married her. That's why I joined the military. We got a divorce. I ended up getting custody. And I was just not a good dad at all. I was more about me. I was selfish. I was 18 years old as a dad. And then I met my current wife, and she actually raised my firstborn son from the age of 6 until now. And he still calls her mom. But even then, I didn't want any more children until after I came to the Lord. And he had put it on my heart for more. And then come to find out that while I was younger, while my mom was taking us to a Catholic church, one of the priests there actually prophesied over me that I would have many children. And that actually became a point of contention. No, I'll show you. Yeah, the Father showed me.
Yeah, God laughs at our plans, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Yeah. Yes, he does.
You mentioned that one abortion was different, the chemical abortion.
And, the last one, yes.
So it wasn't the morning after pill she took, it was chemical abortion pill?
My wife and I, we've had two. The first one was the one I discussed. That's where she actually went into a clinic, and I believe it was the suction one. The second one is the one, I don't know why, but that's the one that really was just different for me. The first one, yeah, anger, but I put that towards everything else, the other five that I had before it. Your body, your choice, not my problem. And I just numbed the pain, numbed the anger.
What were your emotions like at the time of that last one? You said it was different. What was that like emotionally?
That one, it was one of my first times actually dealing with the emotions of it. Because as my wife and I talked, she had to do the research on the Plan B pill. And even when we went up to get it, I went with her. And the pharmacist told us, you may throw up, but you have to dig through your vomit and get that pill back and have to retake it. And well, that was the situation we had to deal with. And my wife told me a couple days later, day later, that she felt when the baby left. And that's when it hurt. That's when I realized that I had been paying for hired murder. I don't know another way of putting it.
How many abortions had you had in your past before you met your wife?
Five.
And then how many total?
Seven. I consider the Plan B an abortion as well. It is.
So describe what happened when you told your wife about the past abortion.
She had known that I had a very dark past. I had always been a very private person. It was never anything that she asked me about. I was very nonchalant about it. I had no emotions. I had numbed myself and self-medicated myself for so long. It was a day in the life to me. That's honestly how I looked at it.
In a previous video, you had described her look when you told her and its impact on you. Could you share that with us?
While we were at, I believe we were actually at one of our Save One meetings, and just came out and told her. And there was no more doubt, no more wonder in her eyes. Like I said, I had no emotion before that. And sitting in that classroom and just, I have had seven abortions, was big. And she looked at me, and the moderator, Miss Wendy, lovely lady, all eyes were on me. And that's when I actually felt and knew what shame was, that she didn't, sorry, it's hard for me to put into words. It's, I stepped down a couple notches when I told her, and that was difficult for me because I've always been a very prideful man. When I looked at her and she looked at me, and it just, I'm sorry. So I saw the shame in her eyes, and it just, it hurt my pride. It hurt my ego. And I was in the beginning of my walk with our King. And shortly after that is Not when I fell away. I guess about 2 years later, I started losing the fire for our king. And luckily, through Pastor Jack, Sheila, godly men, Larry, oh my Lord, Larry, godly men praying for me, have I been able to come through? I don't want to say it was the abortion that helped me lose the fire because that was a healing. But as I said, ripping off all those band-aids and dealing with all those emotions. And then a lot of it was when my mom came to live with us that was difficult.
What was the healing process like for you, Josh?
It was hurtful, but the Lord showed me, it was pain, physical, emotional, a lot for me to deal with. I had had walls up my whole life. Nobody got near me. If no one got near me, I couldn't be hurt, and going through this recovery, the abortion recovery, was the start of breaking down those walls in big chunks. And it was hard. It was glorious, painful.
Was there one thing that you can point to that made the biggest difference in your healing?
My obvious answer is submission to my king. I do have to say, Save One helped me with that. And directly after I went through Save One, I also went through the abuse recovery from my childhood, also with Sheila. And he leads us in paths that are not comfortable, but the outcome is always better.
Yeah. He asked us to pick up our cross and carry it for his sake. And
Yes.
that was a heavy cross to bear, wasn't it?
Yes, it always has been. But thank you, Jesus. I am
Yes.
free. I was talking with my wife this morning. And simply praying, just everything goes well. And if one person can resonate, that's all that matters. Everything I've gone through, leaving the 99 for the one, such an extreme concept until you're that one.
Yes.
And Lord knows I was that one.
Kathy, let's go back to you for a little bit. How did you heal from your long, years-long career as an abortionist?
I actually didn't do abortions for that long. It was all during my program. Seemed like a long time, and I probably killed over 500 people. But I guess God, he needed me to heal quickly. So as soon as I understood that I was a mass murderer, thankfully, a friend gave me Susan Stafford Roux's book, Will I Cry Tomorrow, which is on post-abortion healing. And I read that, and then I was near Jacksonville, and we have the Christian Healing Center here, Francis McNutt Center. And my friend was a counselor there, and she said, "Why don't you come to this center and let's pray with you?" And she started praying with me in tongues, and all of a sudden, I felt myself at the feet of Jesus, and all I could see was the bottom of his gown. And he said, "Are you more important than I am? Are you more powerful than I am that I can forgive you and you cannot forgive yourself?" And I said, "No." And then she asked if I wanted to see my baby, and I said, "Yes." And I saw this little boy running in a field, and he looked over his shoulder at me and said, "I forgive you, mommy." And
Wow.
during that whole process, I suddenly knew what it meant to cry your eyes out because I literally felt as if I was crying my eyes out. But that basically did it. I forgave myself and I just said, "Whatever you want, I'll do." I did not want to do anything associated with abortion. But that week, I got an email asking for volunteers to testify before Congress on the partial birth abortion, and I responded and said I would go. They didn't need me then, they already had someone, but that opened the door, and I ended up testifying throughout the country, both in courts and in front of legislatures, and then eventually did end up testifying before Congress.
For quite a while, Kathy, you were convinced that God did not exist in spite of your upbringing. That's an interesting place to be considering your past. How did God grab hold of your heart?
God really had to chase me down. I kept searching for God. My dad was a Methodist preacher, and I thought, "Oh, when I get confirmed, I'll find God then." Very active in youth group, but at confirmation, it just nothing happened. It was just a bunch of rules, basically. And by the time I got to college, after seeing the way Christians treated my father at times, I just thought religion was the opiate of the people. I remember meeting, I went to chapel a few times, and there was this priest, Episcopal priest, that I thought, gosh, I wish I had what he had. But I got busy, you know, and just didn't have time. And then after graduation, I had been accepted to medical school. I was working as a teacher at a parochial school to make money to go to medical school. And I had a car, and I felt on top of the world. I remember driving in the backwoods of Pennsylvania. And I don't remember the question, but I remember my answer was, well, I don't want to give my life to Christ now because I want to have some fun first. Well, that it was right after that. I met my husband, had an abortion, and, you know, downhill spiral. You know, I could have made the choice then. He also, right before that, I had been walking through the park and I saw a pamphlet, and it was about Jesus. And I read it and I thought, ah, that would be so wonderful if it were true. But I said, but it's not true. And I put it down. So God had tried to get a hold of me before all this began. And I sometimes wonder what my life would have been like. I probably would have been spared a lot of pain. And yet he redeems the worst things in our lives for his good. And I'm so thankful every day. Thank God that he did chase me down and catch me. You know, basically, my girlfriend and I were both in bad marriages, and we decided we wanted to hear what we had heard as children. And so we went back to church. We wanted to go to the Episcopal church because it was really pretty, but we had both been raised Methodist, and we didn't realize they started a different time. So we went across the street to the Methodist church and just felt great being there. And then one day the pastor gave a sermon on Abraham in a small, still voice. And I thought, I've been waiting for the big miracles and the clanging cymbals, but there's a small, still voice here. He didn't even make a gospel call. He just said, if you will write in your Bible that you dedicate your life to God today, you'll see a change within a year. Well, I did that, and then I just felt overwhelmed. So I went to see him as soon as the church office was open. And he gave me two books to read, C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity and Josh McDowell's Evidence That Demands a Verdict. And because I did not believe that Jesus even really walked the earth, so I read Josh McDowell's book first, and I just needed that intellectual proof that Jesus was real. And then I read C.S. Lewis's book, Mere Christianity, and then I believed that Jesus was either who he said he was, or he was the biggest lunatic ever. And that was the beginning of my journey. It's just sad that I still believed in abortion, but he got a hold of me, and, you know, with that article, and that's when I finally became pro-life.
Well, it's not always in one fell swoop that he pulls his saints to his side. Often takes work, like what you experienced too.
Speaking of that moment, how did your life change going forward after God came into your life?
I ended up with a divorce because my husband was so upset that I would put anything before him that he just became extremely angry with me and abusive. And we eventually, you know, ended up with a divorce. My life before and after was sort of night and day. I guess I was filled with peace.
Well, I've got a question for both of you. How has God redeemed you out of all of those years of grief and shame? Josh?
Words can't describe. I submitted to my king on September 2nd, 2013 at 3:35 p.m. Most glorious day of my life. My walk has been fun. Rough, uphills, downhills. I mean, if you want to look at physical evidence, my wife and I are more financially sound than we've been, even with children, with two children. We've got a house, we've got yard, we've got everything financially that we could want. But above all of that, when I close my eyes at night, my brain can turn off finally. I'm not warring with myself. I'm not fighting battles in my head every day. I'm not fighting the world anymore. I don't have to. My king has already won. I get to bask in his victory. And that has brought me more peace. And I thank Jesus every night when we say prayers with our boys. And I thank them every night how he uses those boys to bring me peace and joy. And anyone that has children understands boys don't bring peace and joy, but these boys do. Through all their chaos and arguing and bickering and fighting and just playing, you know, they come up to the sweetest thing and just come up and say, Daddy, I love you, you know? And it's just a hard day at work and I come home and they're like, Daddy! And it's just, it's glorious. Well,
I can tell you, as a father of four sons, they do bring peace and joy into our lives. Just to follow up, and Kathy, we see you now and get to you after this follow-up question with Josh. Have you run into, Josh, people that knew you before and then see you after, and have they remarked on the difference?
The only people that I know or that I talk to from before are people from my high school. I was born and raised in Texas. We have moved to Tennessee about 15 years ago. And shortly after we moved up here is when I came to Christ. So I don't really see people on a day-to-day from my previous life, but my friends that I do talk to, high school buddies, they wonder what my change is. Like I said, I'm not fighting anymore. I'm not warring. I don't wake up ready to fight. And I gladly tell them all the same thing. It's Jesus. You know, you knew me before. You don't know me now.
He's given you quite the platform to witness, hasn't he?
In my humble opinion, yes. I do my best to speak Jesus. I mean, like at the construction site I'm at today, you know, I get to speak Jesus to all the superintendents and everybody I work with, and every last one of them. There's not a single one that cusses around me. They all show respect when they come around me. And it's just the aura of Christ. They have respect for him. And they show that to me, and I'm thankful.
And to our listeners who aren't aware, Josh is literally sitting in a vehicle at a construction site participating yes. in this interview. So we're so grateful you took time out of your very busy day. Kathy, let's go back to you. How has God redeemed you after all of the years of grief and shame?
I guess by taking those worst parts and allowing me to save babies now instead of kill them. And I feel so thankful every day and so joyful every day. I guess that's the big change for me, is just being filled with joy.
As a Christian who grew up in a Christian home, never experiencing the drama and conflict and tragedy that you too have, and to see your passion now, those of us look at you and say, oh, that's a wonderful faith to have. Not wanting to go through what you have, but admiring what God has done with you too as a result of the ashes of your lives is just remarkable.
Thank you.
And here's a question I'd like to say to both of you. Josh, what would you say to a man who is considering an abortion?
Stand up for your child. Don't do it. God will make a way. He always has. He always will. Abortion is not the answer. There is too much pain and suffering that comes after that nobody talks about. It needs to be brought out. Bring that child of God into this world.
Well said, Kathy.
I think it's so important for men to be involved because, for one thing, the vast majority of women would not have the abortion if they felt they had that support. And it is their child, too. They have the right to have some input. I think the saddest story I ever heard was about a young man whose girlfriend got pregnant and he wanted the baby. He told her he would completely take care of the baby. He wouldn't, you know, she wouldn't have to be involved if she didn't want to be. He did everything that he could to save that baby, and she just wouldn't have it. And she had the abortion and he was devastated. And that's so sad.
Kathy, in your position as a physician and your history of doing abortions, what would you say to a man or woman who is actually a practicing abortionist now?
I think I would say that they need to really look at what they're doing and why they're doing it. And I think you pretty much have to have some kind of a personal relationship with that person to be able to get them to listen to you and really think about what they're doing and maybe talk about the science and the fact that this is a human being and You know, I didn't change my mind because people yelled at me. Really, God had to tug at my heart. But then it did take
Amen.
It did take someone being brave enough to approach me about it, you know, and that article was perfect for me. And God knew that because he knew my dad's history. I think listening to the Holy Spirit, praying and having other people praying for that person before you talk to them, I think is critical because God's the only one who can really change their mind.
Kathy, why do women seek abortion? Do you think it solves all their problems?
Just that the mantra right now is that women need abortion to succeed. And that's just not true. And it's very demeaning of women to say, you know, to say that. But we devalue women. We devalue the preborn. We devalue children now. And we need to change our culture. And we, instead of falling back on abortion to solve all our problems, we need to provide better childcare and support for women, not only with unplanned pregnancies, but with planned pregnancies, and put our priorities there instead of just saying, we'll just kill it, just get rid of it.
Well said. Well, it's been an honor to know and meet both of you. I always like it, Kathy, when our paths cross. And Josh, I'm looking forward to our paths crossing again. I think your testimonies will really make an impact to our audience. So thank
you. I hope.
Thank you.
You know, Brad, once again, I find myself just so appreciative of our guests and what they've shared with us today. Their stories are just unparalleled. It's one of those things where they have such an inspiring story of redemption that you can't even question it. They have become such wonderful advocates for life. And when Josh said that it's all worth it if it just resonates with one person, I want to say, if you're that one person that he was speaking of, go to our website, lifeissues.org, where you'll find free resources and information to help you start the same journey that Josh did. And if you know someone who may be in need of that, again, go to lifeissues.org, where you'll find those resources that you can share with them.
You know, Victor, this program has demonstrated to me once again that the abortion industry chews people up and spits them out. Recovery is only by the grace of God. The only person that they can run to is Jesus and find that redemption and healing. So I hope those who have heard about the resources you just spoke about will go online and find them. And we, of course, can help if they need special attention.
Oh, that's absolutely right. And I couldn't agree more. And while you're at our website, lifeissues.org, I also want to encourage you to become a part of our mission. Join the Life Defenders today. You can be a daily part of our work to save babies and help us to promote a culture of life across America. Your monthly giving in any amount is a tremendous commitment to the pro-life movement. And though we may not all have life-altering, inspiring stories like our guests we had today, we can all support vital pro-life education through monthly donations. Monthly giving helps us reach more persuadable people with a pro-life message. Monthly giving enabled the very creation of this show we had today. So help us do more for the babies by becoming a Life Defender today. Once again, you can easily sign up on our website. That's lifeissues.org. And be sure to tune in next week for another Straight Talk on Life Issues.